our ship together, a queer women of color debrief on the latest in queer lady and POC representation in television and film. I'm Aphrodite.
And I'm Amira.
And this is it, y'all. If you've not been watching One Day at a Time, this is our podcast episode devoted to season 3. And we're
Spoilers ahead. All
the spoilers. We gave you a heads up.
Yeah.
You should know by now. And also, if you've been paying any attention on social media, every single one of your friends should have been yelling at you to watch One Day at a Time season 3 so that he can get renewed for season 4.
Yeah, it's already seemed, after season 2 aired, they kind of made it seem like it was on the fence to get renewed for season 3, and thankfully we got a renewal there. They still, like, Netflix execs agree that it's, like, a good show, but viewership is a little on the low side for their liking. So we have to make these, you know, capitalist pigs happy and play the game. Full shade at Netflix. No, I mean, I get it, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But still, I just feel like a lot of people are sleeping on the show. A lot of queer POC would really appreciate the show. And even if you're not queer, even if you're not a person of color, it's just a good fucking show. Like, it's just, it's funny. Yeah. Let's dive in.
We're going to assume you've already been convinced. We're going to assume that we don't need to make the case for you. And that you've already done your homework as a queer person or a queer person of color. And if you haven't, then shame on you. Shame on you.
But if you have, please go tell your friends. Be that annoying little gnat in their ears, constantly telling them to watch One Day at a Time.
Please, please, please let this show be renewed. And I will be so sad otherwise.
I know. And I've said this before, even if it's like, even if it's somebody who doesn't like the show, just like, just put it on Netflix. Just put it on to have it on in the background because the views still count, even if you're not physically there watching.
Amir and I were recently talking about how this might be the queerest season yet.
Oh, for sure. For sure it's the queerest season yet.
It was just so explicitly queer from the first episode.
It's like diving headfirst into queer culture and queer issues from the teenage perspective of like how to first navigate these issues. And I really appreciated that because I don't relate a lot to teenage representation in the media. But for this show, I was definitely like, wow, this was me in high school. Or actually, what I was really thinking is, I really wish I had this to watch in high school.
So the season opens with a funeral. One of the tias has passed away. We got two Brooklyn Nine-Nine guest stars, and we got Gloria Estefan, who sings the theme for One Day at a Time in one episode. It was just like, I was really pleased with how they were making the family dynamics play out, and especially Stephanie Beatrice's character, the cousin.
We got to see Stephanie Beatrice play a butch for butch lesbian. I mean,
I know.
What more could you want? Except, actually, I would have loved if Susan had some lines, her wife. But I'll take what I can get.
Yes, Susan was also the non-binary character who Michelle had that sex scene with.
Oh.
Did you not recognize?
I didn't. The toe sucking?
Yeah, the toe sucker.
Wow. All right. All right.
From Vita. No, it is like totally a Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Vita, One Day at a Time love fest across these shows.
Love it.
I don't know if it, is it butch for butch or like butch for non-binary. I don't know. We have not seen QPOC couple like that before.
My first thought when I saw them was like, wow, they look real. Like I was like, they look like a real gay couple, which is like so rare.
It was also fun to see Stephanie Beatrice play butch. On Brooklyn Nine-Nine, she's not clear butch. She's more
She's pretty futch.
Somewhere in the middle there. It's the all black and the low voice and everything. She's a different character and a different type of queer.
I feel like on TV these days, it's always, you know, super like high femme for high femme. It exists in real life, but like, let's see a little bit of diversity. So it just reminded me of this episode of The L Word where they were on a cruise. And I was watching the actor's commentary over the episode. And there was like a scene where they were passing by these super butch looking lesbians. And I don't remember if it was Kate Manning or Leisha Haley, but one of them just goes, the real lesbians. And I just feel like that comment always stuck with me. Oh. I was like, oh my God, it's true. It's like whenever you see them as like an extra or something in the background, you're like, well, there we are, you know.
They're the real ones.
Yeah.
The mask of center queers who otherwise we never get to see. That's hilarious. Also, I love you for always watching the behind the scenes, like extras
you know
and the
I
commentary.
Look for it.
I know. I know we both do. We both do. We really do. But this was just a really fun funeral episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, who knew an episode about a funeral would be so fun? But yeah, it was hilarious. It was touching. So Stephanie Beatrice's character, Pilar, is pretty obviously gay looking. I mean, we talked about that already. She was very like butch presenting. And so Elena assumes that because of the way Latin culture is and their family in particular, that this poor cousin has not had the chance to come out and be herself.
Yeah.
So she takes it upon herself, the self-dubbed lesbian Jesus, to try to urge Pilar out of the closet.
She does it in classic baby gay fashion. Mm-hmm. Like, she's just like, gay, 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 me gay, gay, gay.
Yeah.
You gay, 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 me gay, gay, gay. Let's gay, gay, gay. Like,
that was an accurate recap.
Honestly, it's just so awkward, the baby gayness.
I know.
It's just, and, like, so uncomfortable, but and also Pilar, so
like,
hilarious.
She sees right through it when she tells Elena, like, the stages of being gay. I was like, oh my god, this is so true.
I know. I'm surprised Pilar wasn't rolling her eyes the whole time. Elena's just, yeah.
It's just, it's one of those scenes where I'm like, I know a queer person wrote this. And it just, like, it made me so happy.
I can speak from personal experience as a baby gay, having done some weird ass shit trying to relate to other queer people who were older than me and wanting to like be friends or like win them over. And I would just like admire them from afar because like, oh my gosh, you're so much older than me because you're queer and 10 years older. And Elena's enthusiasm, I thought Pilar was kind of put off at first. Like, this is just a lot to push somebody to say or do something that you want them to do.
Right.
That happens a lot, I think, when straight people approach queer people and straight people who are like super LGBT friendly are trying to prove how good of an ally they are by like trying to get you to talk about being queer and stuff. I mean, it was kind of annoying, even though it felt extremely true to life. And I just like, God, I was once that annoying. Oh my God.
I mean, it's true that it's similar to how straight people approach gay people, but it's also sort of generational difference. I just think that a lot of like younger LGBT folks are used to wanting more. Older generations are used to being like, oh no, it's okay. Like, I'll just sit here quietly, not quite in the closet, but I'm not going to be like in people's face about it. I feel like younger people want to do the whole like out and proud thing. And older people are like, I'm okay.
You know, I sometimes think it's actually the other way around.
Really?
You know, kids are coming out in like middle school and shit. Mm-hmm. And the youngins are like, yeah, everybody's queer. So what? And then the queers who had to fight to come out. Now it's easier to come out than in the past. Right. And so it's sort of, it's a very casual thing. But the particular dynamic here is very true to life. Elena is already out and just wants to have another person in the family. And it's hard to not want that.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, this is an opportunity for Elena to not be the only queer in the in the family. Mm-hmm. Although during this episode, we also see that little boy. Melissa Fumero's kid, son, is super gay also.
He's very flamboyant.
Yeah.
He's
super
like,
duper cute.
Like four or five.
I know. So funny.
Yeah. I loved like the hand signal. You know, they put their pants up like, I'm not going to say it.
Yeah.
And Elena's retaliation of like doing like the double hands.
Yeah.
It was one of those episodes that I think a lot of queer people of color can relate to. I think a lot of cultures of people of color have this kind of stigma in common where like, you know, even if they're not like actively against it, it's just like you kind of don't talk about it. And I love the throwaway line at the end when Stephanie Beatrice reveals that they had that veil or whatever that Lydia and her sister had been fighting over for all these years. And they were like, yeah, remember you guys like came to our wedding? And Lydia goes, oh, I thought that was just like a really friendly barbecue.
No. We find out later that Pilar has actually been out this whole time. It's just that people keep forgetting. And I think that is also a very QPOC response. You don't shove the person out or disown them, but you also stay in denial for like decades, potentially.
This show continues to be relevant for not just Cuban families or like Latinx families, but just families of color in general. I think I see a lot of things that I relate to culture-wise with this family in particular.
I mean, we also find out that, you know, Penelope is her cousin who used to be her best friend is like, you know, a Trump supporter and homophobic. This particular episode brought out a lot of those different types of family dynamics.
It kind of seemed at the end they had like reached a resolution regarding the homophobia stuff. And then in her toast, she made that pro-Trump comment. And you just see Penelope, like, slowly turn her head and look at her. And it's like, oh, no.
Nope.
The first episode started off already with a bang. A gay bang.
Mm-hmm.
No,
yeah.
Sorry, not literal. That comes later. true to the form of this show, they tend to try to tackle difficult issues one episode at a time.
Cute.
Thank you. And so episode two, most people were expecting that the show would try to tackle the like hashtag Me Too movement stuff. I was really happy with how they handled it. And they talked about it in the second episode. And the reason I was happy is because I feel like a lot of shows will try to tackle difficult topics and they want to bring you the like, you know, both sides of the story approach and then sort of reach a resolution. But I'm usually not very satisfied with the resolution because they make it seem like a very wide gray area of, oh, you know, who knows what's right anymore or like whatever. And it's like, okay, I don't know what the writers of those shows are actually thinking, but it frustrates me when they don't more definitively pick a side, I guess. So
yeah,
what I like about this episode, which is called Outside, was that they did leave it with a gray area, but the gray area was what are women to do when they experience this kind of thing in terms of like reporting incidences or keeping it to themselves. Penelope says that women are in a lose-lose situation. And she says, if you don't say something, you carry it around inside. If you do say something, you carry it around outside. So yeah. I like that that was the gray area they left it on. You know what I mean? I feel like they did that right, where it's like, it's true. Like you can't really say what's right for any particular person in that situation. I also loved that they made the episode like a teachable moment for Alex, but they didn't make it about him. It was about the women and their stories. And just sort of like, as an aside, Alex was learning from it.
I think one thing that they did well with this hashtag Me Too episode was that they talked specifically about how queer women, invisibly queer women, are harassed.
Yes.
And I think that's also what differentiates it from other TV shows that have tried to talk about sexual harassment. Queer women or lesbian couples are often afraid to be affectionate in public because of how they'll be fetishized and heckled at. These kids are teenagers. They're just kids. And to have these like men on the bus follow them around and like egg them on to kiss. And that's definitely something that many queer women have had like in the back of their mind whenever they've walked in public with a female presenting partner.
Whether or not it's happened to you, it's something that we tend to
think about. I remember, you know, going out to a party and dancing with another woman and just thinking, oh my God, a man is going to think this is an invitation.
Right,
and it's probably best not to be physically affectionate at all in order to protect me and the other woman. That's like an angle that they took with this episode that they didn't have to, but they, again, queered it up wherever possible. And they brought in Elena's queerness into a storyline that could have just been about relationships between men and women. Elena sort of confessing the reason why she and Sid have been staying in all day playing video games also prompted Penelope to share her experience as well, being sexually assaulted when she was in the military.
Because, I mean, we know unreported sexual assault in the military is a big problem. And I feel like this was like a great example of a story where like the story made sense. Like it was, it was realistic. Like, I mean, of course it's realistic. This kind of stuff happens all the time, but like, you know, she kind of explained logically and practically why she chose not to report it. And it made sense.
And the reactions were true to life too, because Elena felt incredible shame for not fighting back, but also she and Sid were very scared. But that reaction, that feeling of sort of shame and regret is something that I think many women or female presenting people deal with when they've been harassed or assaulted. It's just like you hold it in and then you feel terrible about it. And even though you know it's not your fault, it still feels that way.
Two other things I like on sort of the men's side of this story. One, Alex revealed that he didn't learn this behavior from the usual creeps that you would think he did. He actually learned it from his abuelita, Lydia.
Yep.
Who encouraged him to keep basically pestering his now girlfriend, Chloe. And she said, every no is a yes in disguise to, you know, horrified reactions from everybody else. That was really well done. I mean, she was raised to believe that those kinds of behaviors, catcalling, she tells a story about how like Tia Mimi and Tio Rico got together and Tia Mimi was blindfolded, kidnapped, and woke up barefoot in a cornfield. And, you know, Lydia believes that this is romantic. And Penelope says, That is the plot of Taken 2.
Oh my God. That was hilarious.
Yeah. So yeah. It's like, you know, I mean, there is like a generational difference. There's a cultural difference between people. And so you learn things. If you learn things from like, you know, certain sources, you may not be getting the whole story. And so of course, Alex, thinking that, you know, his grandmother of all people is giving him like advice on the matter, thinks that it's solid advice. I mean, why would he not? So, and then the other thing I liked was also Schneider's reaction regarding the enthusiastic consent. And he sort of seemed alarmed and apparently, you know, like ran off and apparently went to call all of his previous lovers and confirmed later that they all did consent. Yeah. It was just very underwhelming, apparently.
Oh my God.
Which I like because, you know, it encourages men not only to think about the future, but also examine yourself and your past relationships and own up to mistakes you may have made. Again, I loved that it included men and women and queer women, but it didn't focus on the men.
It's just really impressive how they deal with very complex topics in a nuanced way. I think it's difficult for a sitcom to accomplish that. We have to remember that this is a show that has a laughing track. And
no, they have a live audience.
What? Oh my God, it's a live audience.
Yeah, yeah. No laugh track for them. No. It's live live reactions. All the reactions you hear on the show are live and unprompted.
Okay, well, thank you for that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
The writing is so good that they tackle these subjects and then like they still relieve the tension with comedy, but it's like well placed. It doesn't take away from the depth or the gravity of the topic at hand. When Elena talks about how they were followed by those guys after they got off the bus, Alex is like, oh man, you know, I want to kill those guys. And Lydia goes, no, no, don't bloody your beautiful hands. I will.
Oh my God. Well, I mean, I just love that scene, that moment where Sid and Elena are trying to teach the family about enthusiastic consent. Yeah. And it's like, may I place my hand here?
Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah. Ah! I know. It was just, I would say overall that episode was, I'm going to tentatively for now rank it second best episode of season 3.
Ooh,
for my personal list. I mean, really all of these episodes were fantastic. I can't pick a single one where I was like, I didn't care for it. Like they were all top notch, but as much gay as there is in this season, there's not a lot of gay in every single episode, but you know, there are like sometimes offhand mentions of, you know, Elena talking about Sid, who is very adorably now referred to as her significant other.
So cute.
Yeah.
And I love, like, Schneider came up with it and I'm like, kudos to Schneider.
I know. I just,
for that.
I love when Schneider came in and he like brought his like list out. He's like, all right, I've been working on a few names because they were trying to find like a good non-binary friendly term for Elena to call Sid, because Sid was comfortable with girlfriend as of last season, and now in this season they said that they wanted a more gender neutral term. I love how Schneider was trying to help, and then they came up with significant other, and then Schneider adds, oh, you mean significant other.
I know. And they were, it's like, just brilliant.
Ah! Yeah, it was really good. It was really good.
And I love that Schneider is like number one fangirl of the Alvarez family.
Oh.
In every possible way.
Yeah.
Like, he's just there like, no, I'm going to help you come up with your ship name.
Yeah.
Or no, I'm going to help you come up with whatever you're going to refer, name you're going to use.
In episode 5, so Alex gets caught smoking weed. Penelope grounds him. So he's grounded for like the majority of the rest of the season. But it's kind of nice because I feel like the scenes he's in, especially with Elena, are like really like fun in like a cute sibling kind of way. And then also in that episode, Elena and Sid attend the opera with Lydia and Dr. B, and Elena starts saying something about how like queer the opera is, and Lydia's like, oh, you think everything is gay, and then she accidentally takes one of Dr. B's, well, it's a CBD lozenge, so it technically
it's an edible.
Yeah, it technically shouldn't have gotten her high if it's only CBD, but she gets really high, and then she goes, you're right, it is gay.
Sort of like stuff like that where it's not, where like the queerness is just sort of everywhere. It's not, here's the one special episode and then her queerness is no longer relevant.
Yeah,
or queer culture or queer references are no longer brought in, you know?
Exactly, I know. It's just kind of like fun little lines that I feel like more shows should like learn to like pick up on that and do those things. Like you don't have to have like a queer-centric storyline in every episode. With your queer characters, you just yeah. just remind us that they're queer. You know what I mean? It's just like, yeah. I have kind of like a test I do for shows with queer characters where I'm like, mm-hmm. if I pick out any episode, will I know that that character is queer? Ooh. And a lot of them fail that test. A lot of them do Ooh. Because they'll only mention it in queer-centric plotline episodes, which sometimes are few and far in between.
This is like, we need like some kind of like a queer Bechdel test. Do we know that this person's queer? Some kind of criteria to figure out, is this person actually queer or are they only queer in episode 3?
Right. And then like, you know, to make sure certain tropes are absent for queer men versus queer women storylines. Yes. I wish we could have a test for non-binary storylines, but we have so few of them. Actually,
yeah.
Sid is the only non-binary character that's like on our radar right now of all the shows that we watch. So
yeah, and I probably have like misgendered them, actually, thinking about it, because I refer to them as a lesbian couple.
Yeah, I mean, I think queer couple is the appropriate term, right? Because I mean, yeah, you can't say lesbian or same-sex couple.
Another one-liner that definitely gives away that there are queer people on the writing team. Elena makes a reference to cosplaying and Wynonna Earp.
Oh my god. It was in the Outside episode, actually, that we were just talking about. Because Penelope finds out about Alex's Finsta, and then and then Elena says, "Oh, mine is just me cosplaying Wynonna Earp," and Penelope goes, "You said a lot of words that sound fake, but okay."
Yes, not only is she definitely gay, she's definitely a fangirl. One of the writers on the writing team is also definitely a Wynonna Earp fangirl, too.
I mean, Selena and General as a couple are, like, huge fan people. I mean, like, in many episodes across the 3 seasons, they're huge fucking nerds. And that's why they're, like, my favorite ship. I just love them so much, and I relate to them a lot. I also love when Elena was like, "Oh, Mom, you can follow my Finsta," and Penelope was like, "No one wants to see your nerdy crap, Elena."
Oh, man. Flash forward to Valentine's Day. I thought that was just ridiculously funny, that episode.
Oh my god.
Where Sid and Elena come out and they've got like two giant, like, it looks like they're tits on their heads.
Yes.
Like flaming red tits on their heads, and they're supposed to be hearts because Elena has roped them into doing some kind of a 5K for like heart health or something like that. She always has to turn every opportunity into like a social justice moment.
Right, yeah. She doesn't want to give in to like the capitalism of Valentine's Day, and keeps mocking the couples who are participating in it. And then Sid, I love how Sid is constantly hinting at like Benihana's.
I know. Sid is so adorable in that episode, in the Valentine's Day episode, because it's so clear that they just want to enjoy themselves, and Elena's just there to shut it down.
Yeah. And Elena, like, doesn't even see it at all. She, like, doesn't realize that Sid literally just wants to go have dinner at Benihana's.
I know. And, like, Elena's, like, definitely classic, like, feminist killjoy.
Uh-huh.
And poor Sid is just like, "Listen, I'm happy. I want to do happy things. Let's go and do, like, a traditional Valentine's Day. Let's be cute. Let's do all this stuff. I want to know what color makes my eyes pop."
Because when you go back to episode 1, when Pilar was talking about the phases of being gay, I feel like this is very much one of them, where you're, like, you're out and you're proud and you want to be active and do all the cool, like, activist stuff. And then as you get older, I feel like most people, not everybody, gets to a point where they're like, "You know what? I just want to, like, enjoy things." Not everything has to be like a cause. And I just love that Sid is the person who gets Elena to that point.
I also like that Elena, as the sort of feminist killjoy, it's not just that she's a killjoy to straight people necessarily, but sometimes to her own partner. Towards the end of the episode, where they have their little like argument and then they start to make up, that's when they first exchanged the love word. They exchanged their I love yous.
It's so cute. And Elena gives Sid the cutest and nerdiest card, and I cannot believe I would have never, like, when I saw it, I was like, wow, never in a million years would I have ever thought that up. And I feel like I think of some pretty punny things. She gives them a non-binary heart card. No wonder Sid said I love you in that moment. I mean, they were probably just like overwhelmed with the, like, the thought and love that went into that card.
Ultimate nerdtastic. Like, because it's like zeros and ones everywhere in the card except for the heart, where there are other numbers. I'm like, oh my god, Wow. The way that they put something nerdy anywhere you can put anything on the show to really send home the message. Like, these two are fucking nerds.
Yeah, I know.
I love it.
So not only are there queer people writing the show, there are some fucking nerds writing the show.
Yes, for sure, for sure.
Yeah. Okay, so the episode after Valentine's Day is my number one favorite episode of this season. For obvious reasons.
Yep.
Not only do Elena and Sid have sex for the first time, but they talk about it. They go through a whole process. And this is what I love about it. I was rewatching the scene, the hotel scene, before we started recording. And I almost started crying again, because obviously I was crying the first time I watched it. All tears of joy. I can't believe this is on TV, in my lifetime, for me to see teenagers talking about having sex for the first time, queer teens. Oh my God. This is everything I could have possibly wanted to see before having sex for the first time, when mm-hmm. I was a teenager.
This is also my favorite episode of the entire season. And I suspect that for most queer people, this is also their favorite episode. Because all the fear, the shame, and the excitement around your first time having sex with someone is all there. When Elena finds out that Sid has had sex before, I honestly felt like a tiny dagger had pierced my heart.
I gasped. I did the full gay gasp, loud and proud.
Yeah.
Let's briefly run through the timeline of
this sure.
amazing, amazing scene. First, Sid says, "Let me put on some sexy music," and they turn on the X-Files theme song. Then they go over their safe word, which is Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
I know.
Then they both exchange enthusiastic consent, which is important for a later point. Then they have the talk about, Elena almost jokingly asks, "When's the last time you were tested?" And Sid admits that she was actually tested before. And so the focus on that is about the fact that she had actually had sex before and Elena didn't know that, and it was really hard mm-hmm. for her to hear. But I also really like the fact that they talked about queer people, especially queer women. I mean, I don't know how to word that appropriately, but need to get tested. I feel like there's this weird myth or stigma in the queer women community that we don't need to get tested. And a mm-hmm. lot of it is from misinformation that's perpetuated by our healthcare professionals. Our own doctors will tell us that, we can't contract anything from each other or whatever. This is a lie. We should all be getting tested if we're sexually active. End of story. Mm-hmm.
The one thing that disappointed me about this episode was how they dealt with STIs in the conversation between Penelope and her lesbian friend, Ramona. Because Penelope goes up to Ramona. She's freaking out about the fact that Elena is sexually active. And Ramona assures her that it's basically risk-free. Obviously, if Sid and Elena are both virgins, I would say that that's risk-free.
Right.
It is not 100% risk-free between two people with vaginas or two people with genitals, period. I'm with you there. I think it's really frustrating that queer people and queer women don't, in general, don't think it's necessary to see a gynecologist or don't think it's necessary to talk to a provider about, getting mm-hmm. tested. That providers think they don't need to bother testing them.
Yeah. I mean, I've had my own doctor tell me that. Luckily, I already knew from before that that's not true. I was just shocked that she said that mm-hmm. because up until that point, I felt like she was a really good physician and was always giving me really good information. Just to quickly break down a couple of myths. You did say previously that if they're both virgins, it's risk-free. That's technically not true. You can have STIs because sexually transmitted infections are not explicitly sexually transmitted. Just because they can be transmitted sexually doesn't mean they are only transmitted sexually. So some people do have what are categorized technically as STIs, even if they didn't have any sort of sexual contact. The other thing is, it's true that most forms of, I'm sorry, I don't know the best way to say this, but two female presenting people or bodies having any sort of sexual contact is a lower risk. That doesn't mean no risk. So you should still get tested. And most schools offer some sort of testing thing. Mm-hmm. I used to get mine done through my grad school clinic. Planned Parenthood is also a great place to go. There are plenty of resources for most people, I should say. I know it's not available in all parts of the country, but Just wanted to plug my little PSA.
No, I hear you. And the other thing to recognize is that lesbians and queer women or trans people are understudied in health research. And so there just isn't a lot of information. And so there's not a whole lot of great research out there on the topic. But I think you can talk to each other and, like, you know, figure out how to have safer sex and get tested and, like, make that a part of the conversation. And I think we've all been guilty of, like, not wanting to bring it up. And, like, sort of letting it slide because it might feel unsexy. But super cute the way they had that exchange. And then, of course, the devastation. Elena realizing she's the virgin but not Sid.
I mean, I just love the way that was done because I felt like the way she was thinking through it was, like, very realistic and relatable. The best part about it is that when Sid, you know, tries to, like, calm her down and reassure her, she says, like, we don't have to do this today. We don't have to do it this year. We don't have to do it at all if that's what you want. And I love that because it gives a prime example of somebody giving enthusiastic consent and then, like, rescinding it and their partner being okay with it. I mean, that's like, like, that's what it looks like. Yeah. Sometimes you go into it, like, guns blazing, but, and then, of course, the truly, truly nerdy moment, in case there hadn't been enough evidence of nerdiness, Sid says, there's a Harry Potter marathon on, and I brought Bertie Bott's every flavor beans just in case.
Oh my God. I love that.
And that's what got Elena's guns going again.
I know. I mean, I just love that Sid's response to everything that Elena was going through was so mature and so compassionate. Wow. To just give your partner the space and the safety to say no. Also, it was really endearing to see Elena's insecurities. She says, you're going to see me naked.
I know.
You think this is why this has never seen the sun. And she's talking about the lower half of her body. I'm like,
you know, another example of how this show, like, really brilliantly mixes in comedy with their, like, very serious moments. But yeah, overall, this scene was, like, so good, so touching. I'm just, like, so happy that they talked about this. And that part of the story was also Penelope trying to figure out, how do I deal with this? Like, finding out that my daughter is sexually active. I don't know anything about the kind of sex that she's having or what to tell her. And so she goes to her lesbian Yoda Ramona. I feel like this is, like, a good episode both for queer kids and parents of queer kids. I really wish that I had a show like this when I was a kid.
Oh my God. Yes. I think actually last year, like, we might have talked about how we wanted to see Elena and Sid develop some kind of sexual relationship, but we weren't sure what they would actually show us. One Day at a Time, I think, showed us just enough and showed us just the important parts.
Yes.
These are still kids. I don't need to see them. Like, I don't need to see the actual sex scene.
This isn't Riverdale.
No, we don't need that. All the, like, build up to it and the processing of emotions and then Elena's fear of being naked in front of another person. Mm-hmm. Those are all real things that people go through before they decide to have sex with someone. Right. And usually when we get sex scenes or, like, sex storylines around teenagers, we don't talk about all that insecurity. It's just two teenagers jumping into bed together.
Yeah. Hormones blazing. They're like, all right, let's go.
They don't have a talk. They don't share their fears. But this was, like, legit. Also, to have all this lesbian processing, I mean, this was just, like, very, very queer. It was, like, maximally queer for a first time.
Processing is our foreplay.
It actually is. Sharing feelings, opening up, you know?
Yeah.
Tell me your greatest fear. It's like, this episode was my favorite episode of the season because of Penelope's face. When she realized Elena was having sex. Justine Machado is just brilliant as an actress here. She, without saying a word, but with just her eyes and her face, like, goes through several stages of, like, fear, sadness, disbelief. Yeah. And then she, like, slowly, like, walks away. She's like, we will circle back to this. And then and then Elena's like, where are you going, Mom? Penelope goes, I don't quite know. And she just closes the door behind her. That was probably the funniest moment of the season for me. I died laughing.
Yeah. Number one episode of the season for both of us.
Question. So Penelope says that there's only one ground rule with Elena, that Elena is not allowed to have her bedroom door closed when Sid is over.
Right.
I want to ask you, whether you think that's reasonable?
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. It seems like the kind of ground rule she would have for Elena if Elena were dating guys. You know, like, you can have them over, but the door has to stay open.
I'm just wondering, but, like, how are they supposed to have sex? I'm just confused.
Well, I think that point was that she doesn't want them having sex. For me, thinking back to, like, how I was raised, I would never, ever have had sex in the house if my parents were there. Yes. You know what I mean? Because that was basically the point of the rule. It's like, if we're all at home, like, you can't have the door closed.
Oh, I see. Because I thought that this also ruled out if Alana and Sid were home alone.
Maybe that was also her intention, but it's also like, how would she know if the door were open or closed if they weren't home?
I'm just thinking the struggle. Alana and Sid had no privacy, and they're just ready to, like, do more than light kissing.
Yeah, but that's how all teenagers are, isn't it? I mean, it's like, you know, we all found a way.
I'm just saying, like, young mm-hmm. people will go to great lengths to have sex. And you don't want them caught by the police because they're doing it in a car, you know?
Right.
Like, I'm just saying.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I'm not really sure how Sid's home life is, or they, like, take turns, like, hanging out at each other's houses. But I guess that wasn't really my primary concern, because I just feel like Penelope's goal isn't to make sure that they have adequate time to have sex. She's probably hoping that they just, like, you know, don't really do it.
Listen,
like, that often, but...
They saved up all that money from playing in their Magic the Gathering League so that they could pay for that hotel room. And I'm thinking, like, how much more money are they going to have to make from, like, card games?
I know.
To pay for another hotel room.
I didn't really think about that, I guess. I just thought, like, most parents don't really want their kids, like, having sex when they're in the house.
I think I'm just, like, really sympathizing with our horny teenagers and just thinking, man, this is going to be hard.
Yeah.
This is going to be really hard.
Teenagers always find a way, so.
Oh, my God. And, like, neither of them has cars. I'm sorry. I'm just thinking about how is Selena going to have sex?
This is going to segue nicely into the next episode where
okay.
Elena starts taking driving lessons
mm-hmm.
from Dr. B. And I love this because I don't know where this meme came from that gay people can't drive or gay people are bad at driving. But our little lesbian starlet is going to defy all stereotypes. And learn how to drive. So I'm guessing that means she's just now 16.
No, she's 17, remember?
Oh, yeah.
She's 17 right. Because Penelope lost her virginity at 17 and a half.
She's getting a car. Maybe that was what she was thinking. It's like, oh, I got to get a car so we have somewhere to have sex.
Basically. That or a public park. I'm just saying. Like,
come on. It's not all right. That's like 0 to 100.
I'm like, I feel for them.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean... bathrooms at school or something.
Jesus, that's not hygienic. Oh my God.
What? They don't have to be on the floor. I don't know. Look, all right, we're not going to go into the details of how these two have sex, but I'm just saying,
fine.
It helps when you both use the same restroom.
Okay. Thanks, Amira.
Yeah, no problem.
Pro
no
tip.
Problem. Yeah. You can fill in the blanks. Briefly, two other things I really liked that they showed. Of course, still talking about, like, the mental health issues and stigma surrounding mental health. I feel like this is really, really, really great to talk about, especially with POC families. There's, like, broad spectrum culture of anti, like, mental health stigma. Penelope is seen having, like, anxiety attacks. Her therapy group encourages her to tell her kids about it, and she says she doesn't want to. And then we see that Elena also is having anxiety attacks. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Penelope realizes that it would actually be really helpful if she talked about it with her kids. And so Alex, who's still grounded, sees how his mom handles his sister's anxiety attack and then really steps up as a brother and helps Elena with her anxiety attack right before taking her driving test. And I just felt like that was a really, really cute, like, sweet moment.
Mm-hmm.
One of yeah. my favorite moments of the season was Alex, like, talking Elena down.
Queer people are, like, much more likely to have mental health conditions mm-hmm, compared mm-hmm. to straight people. LGBTQ people in general have higher rates of depression, anxiety, PTSD, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This is a queer woman of color who's dealing with anxiety issues and whose mom also has anxiety disorder because it's very common in our community. So I'm like, glad. And now they can support each other and talk openly about it. And it's beautiful.
Yeah. Everything's a family affair on this show, and I love it. And then I also really like the episode about Schneider's dad, even though it was like obviously very Schneider and like white people centric in general. Like the Me Too episode, it's like they were educating Schneider about gentrification, but not like making it about him learning about it. You know what I mean? It was about it was still about the Alvarez family and like what are they going to do if he sells the building?
I'm actually going to say that the gentrification episode was my second favorite episode of the season
okay.
Because I thought it was so. intelligently put together. The reality is we're in season three. Schneider's whiteness and his wealth and his status as a landlord was always going to come up. The power differential was always there. So as much as Schneider is a part of the family, he also wields power. He owns the building.
Right.
And I think they had to acknowledge that. And Schneider had to sort of make a decision about what kind of white person he wants to be.
Yeah.
And not only what kind of white person he wants to be, but what kind of chosen family member he wants to be to the Alvarez family. And I think that moment at the end where he chooses to keep things as they are to protect the tenants and to protect the Alvarez family, instead of taking the option that would have helped him rebuild his relationship with his biological father, that chosen family moment was what really sort of sold the episode for me, because I thought it was so beautiful to have him make a choice like that. And, you know, in the beginning of the series, I wasn't wild about Schneider as a character because he was a little bit obnoxious. But, you know, we've come to see over the course of multiple episodes in this season in particular where he plays a supportive role to Penelope when she's going through her anxiety attacks or panic attacks, and to other characters as well, where, you know, he's really there for the family. He's a family member and he shows up for them regularly. And I think he was faced with a very difficult decision. And you're right that they didn't just focus on the white male character and the burden of having to make this choice, but on the impact it would have on the Alvarez family.
Right.
I mentioned this storyline to a friend of mine and they're like, but that's not real life. And I'm like, okay, fine. It's not real life. Like, it's not real life that white people choose not to gentrify. In real life, stuff like this probably is not commonplace. But one day at a time, I think what it does so well is, like, tell us about, like, the harsh realities of the world that we live in, but also give us something to believe in.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like, yeah, it's not real life, but also the rich guy who owns the building isn't usually, like, a self-appointed adoptee of you know, a like working class Cuban family that lives in his building. So it was realistic in terms of like, okay, if that guy had that kind of relationship with the family, you know, what would he choose? But yeah, I agree. That's true. It kind of gives us something to be happy about, you know. It's like, we know that's not how it always is, but
And the reality is that like rich white dudes like Schneider typically never interact with sort of like a Latinx family like this, a single mom, you know, with a multi-generational household. Like, you don't see rich white guys doing that. And one thing that like might be a critique of this episode is that like, why does, maybe not a critique of the episode, but like just like a sort of thought is like, why do rich white men have to be friends with people of color in order to make the right choice?
I mean, it's a little bit answered in the story, because until then he never really had to think about it. I mean, he was telling them as if it's good news, because he doesn't know the extent of their finances. Like, he literally doesn't know what it's like not to be rich. Like, not even just to be like well off or middle class, but rich. So he was like, oh, this is even better. You can actually own the apartment and blah, blah, blah. And they're like, no, that's not how this is going to work for us. And he was like, he doesn't get it.
That was really smart, because I think the perception among wealthy people is that like, oh, well, a mortgage payment and the rent payment are the same amount. And so they don't think about how much do you need for a down payment, you know? Like, you have to have cash on hand, and a lot of poor people just don't have that. And that's why it's always more expensive to be poor than it is to be rich.
Yeah,
it costs you more. You pay more in rent over the long haul, but you can't afford to buy the place either. And it kind of reminds me of like when rich people are like, well, if poor people hate their neighborhoods, why don't they just leave? And it's like, but it costs money to move.
Right.
You realize that, right?
Exactly. Okay, so in a lot of the stories, it's like they have to know somebody in XYZ minority group to understand their struggles and to sympathize with them. But in a lot of cases, they already know, but they just don't care because it doesn't affect them or anyone they know personally until they do know them personally. But in this case, Schneider had to know the family because he literally just, like, somebody had to tell him that that's how it was. And again, it's unfortunate that, you know, he grew up, like, sheltered and privileged. But it is the reality of a lot of people. I mean, like, everybody has sheltered privilege about some issue that affects another community, right? Like, it's easy to look at the rich white guy and be like, oh, why doesn't he know this? This is such common knowledge. But, like, I'm sure there are a ton of, like, issues in the trans community or the disabled community that, like, I don't know about just because, you know, it hasn't been brought to my attention. And I don't know. I feel like this is a really good example of, like, almost like telling white people, like, look, this is why you should have a more diverse friend group, or like, you know what I mean? Mm.
Schneider sees these people as his family and as mm-hmm. humans first and foremost. And that's how everything comes together. Like, this is going to have a real impact on these people that I care deeply about. That was a really strong episode for me. And in general, actually, I thought that the way they dealt with Schneider's alcoholism was also pretty good. That was pretty moving and touching. So I'm glad that they gave that issue attention.
And they briefly gave him the backstory, which sort of also further explains why he's so close to that family, which is that, you know, they gave him a chance after he was recovering from his addiction. He really loved them back for that, for, like, trusting him enough. Enough about Schneider.
Enough about Schneider. Like, but speaking of redemption, I think we need to talk about what happened in the season finale. If you remember, Elena was, like, completely ditched by her father at her quinceañera. At her father's wedding with his new wife, who is a Penelope twin.
Yeah.
that's hilarious, by the way. Also, the Penelope twin is played by, she's the showrunner.
The showrunner, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And the show is based on her family. So really, it's that Penelope looks like her.
yeah. Gloria Calderon Kellett. That's who it
was. Yeah, I was just looking it up too.
So she is the showrunner, and she, like, sort of guest stars as the Penelope lookalike. Like, there's a scene where I think it's really great, and again, another instance where Alex is a great brother to his queer sister. Like, she's already given her toast, and in the toast, she only said positive things about her dad. And then she and Alex are alone, and she gives the speech that she wished she had given instead, where she talks about the pain that she went through. And Alex just sort of listens so that she can get this out. And that was a really great sibling moment. And then when Elena comes back to the wedding, her dad takes the microphone, offers to have the dance they didn't get to have at Elena's quinceañera.
Yeah. He apologizes for not being there for her. I don't know. I was sobbing, obviously, during that scene. Like, the whole Schneider gentrification thing, even if it's not realistic, it was just giving us something to be happy about, that Elena could, you know, finally close that chapter and, like, you know, forgive her father, and they could have, like, a positive relationship moving forward.
And homophobic parents can come around. You know, we saw how he was in season one.
Yeah.
He was a shit dad. Everybody knows it. And then he uses this moment. He encourages Elena to wear the tux. Elena says, I don't want to wear a dress. And
she says, she's like, well, I'm going to wear my suit. I think she says, like, from the quinceañera, she says, I'm going to wear my suit. And he goes, no, you can't. And she's like, ready to get upset. And he's like, because then you can't wear a tux.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, so cute. Oh
yeah, my God. He came around, he supported her, and he owned up to his mistakes. Mm-hmm. And so I just love that they gave his character a chance at redemption. With that final scene, you know, the pain is still there, but he's not going to ignore it. And then I think it was just a very healing moment, and also hilarious when the doctor comes up and he's like, oh, is this a group hug? Oh, not this time. Okay. Back to
that. Yeah. I really like how they resolved the Victor storyline in general, because I was worried that they were going to try to do this, like, will they, won't they, with Penelope. And I, you know, low key, even if he did change or improve, I didn't really want the end result to be that, like, she took him back. Sometimes they present an issue or a storyline or something, and I'm like, oh, you know, I can think of, like, how I don't want this to turn out, but I can't really think of how I do want it to turn out. And then they write the perfect ending where I'm like, damn, that's it. That is how I wanted it to turn out. You know, like, he has this, like, Penelope lookalike wife who Penelope, like, wants to hate, but she can't. She's just great. Yeah. And, you know, they get along really well. And then, you know, Elena forgives him, and he's, like, admitting to, like, all of his faults and blah, blah, blah. I mean, God, like, could it really get any better? They just wrapped it up with a nice bow.
And to have it be a public apology, not a private one, because the damage that he did to Elena was in public. It was in front of all of the people in their community. It was in front of the entire family.
And many of the people who were
family.
At that wedding. Yeah.
Exactly. And so it's not just that, you know, he doesn't just owe an apology to Elena in private. In order for him to redeem himself, he has to sort of admit to it in front of all the very people who he committed that shameful act in front of.
Yes, absolutely.
Like, being absent during his daughter's quinceañera. So really wonderful way to sort of resolve the Victor storyline and to give Elena the healing that she deserves.
Yeah. So, needless to say, we are dying for the season to get renewed, especially because they left us on this crazy cliffhanger where Lydia and Dr. B went to Cuba together.
I don't know.
Lydia swore she would never go back.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on. I'm like, please, I need to see that story. I need to hear that story. Oh, my God. I'm just so excited. I want this show to come back for every possible reason. I love mm-hmm. all of these characters. I love the actors and the writers for bringing them to life. I mean, I can't say enough about the show. I feel like it is probably one of my favorite TV shows of all time.
Wow.
At this point.
Yeah.
Three seasons in.
Wow. I mean, I love that Penelope stays single by the end of the season.
Yeah.
She has her degree. She's now a nurse practitioner.
Yeah.
And she doesn't end up sticking with that guy, Mateo. And she has a moment where her ex from the previous season sort of comes back and they have an intimate dance, but she's like, no, we're moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
And I generally like storylines where straight women stay single.
Yeah. Where it's like where they don't settle. You know what yes. I mean? Like they went through some relationships and there were problems. And the relationships ended and they ended for a reason. And mm-hmm. I feel like that's like a more healthy depiction of how dating should be.
Okay. So let's assume best case scenario. The show gets renewed for a new season.
Mm-hmm.
What would you like to see happen in season 4 for Sid and Elena?
For Sid and Elena. So was this their senior year then?
I think because... it's the junior year.
Because okay. So I'm thinking...
She's getting ready for exams, isn't she? Yeah.
I'm hoping / expecting to see a scene where they have the conversation about going to college.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, whether or not they go to the same college, whether or not they stay in a relationship. I'm definitely expecting them to talk about that. But
yeah.
I'm like also sort of dreading it because I don't want to see them break up.
I know. I mean, okay, for sure I think it's junior year because if Elena was in her senior year, this whole season would have been about her going
to
college.
Yeah, right.
I think that's season 4 is going to be about Elena getting ready to go to college, applying, mm-hmm. potentially being rejected and disappointed or potentially being thrilled at being accepted to her dream school or having to change her dreams altogether and, you know, reconfigure what her life might look like being long distance with Sid. Because I think Sid and Elena are in the same year. I mm-hmm. assume they are. I don't know if Sid is older or not.
I don't remember any references to them being in different grades.
Yeah, I'm guessing if Sid was older, then Elena would have spent the season freaking out about how Sid is graduating. So
true. Yeah.
I mean. I just like knowing their characters, I think Elena would be freaking out regardless. So we saw a little bit of that when Elena had that anxiety attack where mm-hmm. she was you know, being rejected by that all men a cappella group. So I think what we're gonna see is like Sid and Elena try to navigate, you know, what do you do with a high school romance when the both of you go to school, you know, mm-hmm. and how do TV shows deal with that? Usually they send you to the same mass school or you go to school in the same town that you grew up. Mm-hmm. And that way you don't actually have to leave. Right. And they're in California. So it wouldn't be completely outrageous for Elena to go to a school that is still close to home. But
yeah,
she clearly has
like UCs. But yeah, if she has her sights set on Ivy League.
So I think that if next if we get a season 4 and season 4 ends up being the last season, mm-hmm. then Elena will probably go to an out of state school.
Yeah, that's true. But I feel like they could continue the seasons even with her at college because the season could take place just like when she's home for the summer or something like that.
Oh,
you know?
Oh, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, so. Yeah. I'm eager for these kids to grow up, and I want to see Sid and Elena go through all the emotions, the heartbreak, the crying, the I miss yous, the fear of, like, not being able to find someone as cool as your significant other. yeah, I mean, because Sid is pretty amazing, and and Sid is so wildly in love with Elena. It's really cute.
It is.
Sometimes I have to cover my face. They're too cute. Do you know what I mean?
Like, I do. I'll just, like, squeal constantly. During the scenes.
It's sort of like when a light is too bright, you can't look directly at it. Like,
but it's so beautiful.
Yeah. When queers are too cute and too awkward, I can't look directly at it. It burns my eyes, but like I'm enjoying the burning sensation too.
Right.
And because it feels so authentic, I'm like, oh my mm-hmm. God, this is too real. I have to hide right now.
Exactly. Yeah. They continue to be my number one favorite ship of all time.
So this was a whole lot in one podcast episode. We hope you made it through, and we hope you're doing the same thing that we are, which is bugging as many people as possible to watch this show.
Yeah, and you should also, if you have watched it, rewatch it. Rewatch earlier seasons, rewatch this last third season, just, you know, anything to get the views up.
Netflix is really, Netflix is really fucking with us with this whole, it might be canceled. I'm like, what do you want to do? What are you trying to do? You're like stowing panic in the family.
I know. Yeah, it's too much. So I really hope that this like social media campaign works and people are actually going to be watching it. But we saw definitely like proof at Klexicon that white gays specifically tend to sleep on POC ships, which is unfortunate. But I'm also feeling like with this ship specifically, a lot of POC gays are also not like aware of it. That's like the weird, it's like they don't even know about the show.
Yeah. P.S. So. The actor who plays Sid is also going to be at Klexicon this year.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So hopefully by our next podcast episode, we will have some kind of answer as to whether or not this show gets renewed. But for our next episode, we're going to go back to recapping Charmed because we should get a new episode by then, right?
Yes, we'll get a new episode next week of Charmed and Black Lightning, I want to say.
I think so, but we're just not sure how much, you know, Thunder Grace content.
Right, yeah.
So. But thanks for joining us for this season-long recap of One Day at a Time. Tune in next time.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye.